May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. We're here today in this case primarily because the Eastern District rendered an opinion based on a procedural issue in my client's underlying case on his direct appeal from a 2915 case. And what they're saying is that the case needs to be remanded for a Moore hearing because there was a de facto appointment that ultimately caused my client's amended motion to be untimely. And we're challenging that. That's the issue we saw transferred to this court on. And what I'd like to point out to the court is the Eastern District relied on a case, Stanley versus State, where there was an actual appointment. Here, what we're saying is there was no actual appointment by the court. So that's a striking difference. The Eastern District relied on a case where there was an appointment by the court and said in that case it was held, Stanley versus State, that where there's an appointment, the date of appointment is the date the public defender's office was designated as opposed to the date the public defender's office entered. But in my client's case, there's an altogether different issue. And furthermore, there's an altogether other issues that were completely ignored by the Eastern District. And part of that is probably my fault because I was caught off guard. I thought there's no way this can be construed as an appointment. It clearly says it's a notification. How could anyone construe this to be an appointment?
Let's go back to Stanley for a second. In Stanley, the court held that the, quote, effective date of appointment of counsel is the date on which the office of the public defender is designated rather than the date counsel's entry of appearance. So it's just a little bit different phrase from the way you captured it.
Okay.
So my question is, if it's the date the public defender is designated,
right,
and not the date that they enter their appearance, when in this case was counsel designated, and what was the event that designated him?
Well, Judge, I think, first of all, before I get there, there's procedural backdrop that we have to get to. And I'm also saying that in that case, there was an appointment by the court. My case is distinguishable because there's no appointment by the court. And part of the reason why there was no appointment for the court is the backdrop of this case. So this court held in Missouri Public Defender Commission versus Waters that there's issues of ethics that should be taken into account in meeting deadlines. And in that case, what the court said is that there are ethical considerations that must be considered before just blindly appointing counsel, even if a rule requires appointment. And 4.11 is a rule of this court that says, relates to competence. It says, a lawyer shall provide competent representation to a client. Competent representation requires the legal knowledge, skill, thoroughness, and preparation reasonably necessary for the representation. Then there was a case issued by this court where this court said that's true. We have to take matters of ethics into consideration and also effective assistance of counsel. So I realize that in a Rule 2915 claim, maybe the effective assistance of counsel issue is not as relevant, but we still have to provide competent, ethical representation of clients. Yep. In response to that, the public defender's office did exactly what this court said should be done. It wrote a letter to the court. I've included that in the legal file at A29. In that letter, it says, you may have been informed that the Public Defender Commission on November 30th decided to step back from strict enforcement of the commission's caseload under 18 CSR 10-4010 in anticipation of the newly formed bar committee assembled to address criminal justice issues. That being said, we in Area 67 are still trying to get a handle on managing our caseload. Several circuits have implemented our suggestion of notifying our office when post-conviction cases are filed rather than appointing counsel. Though this practice is recently implemented, I am already seeing benefits to our management of assigning cases without significant delays. In response,
the presiding judge of the 22nd Judicial Court issued an administrative order. It said, in response to the request, it's included at 831 of the appendix, it says, in response to the request of the public defender and the directive of the Missouri Supreme Court in State X. Rel. Kelly versus Waters, this court determines that it will no longer appoint the public defender as post-conviction counsel. The court will instead notify the public defender of pro se post-conviction filings under Missouri Supreme Court Rules 24035 and 2915. The judge, after issuing the order, distributed that order to the judges of the 22nd Judicial Circuit. That letter of distribution is included at Appendix A30. And it was issued to the prosecutors in that jurisdiction, the public defender's office in that jurisdiction. So people were relying on this administrative order and this representation of the court. Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, the pro se motion was attached to your amended motion, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the trial court did not make findings on that. So why doesn't this case have to be dismissed for lack of jurisdiction, for lack of a final judgment under Green versus State?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, could you read that?
Yeah, so you agree with me that the trial court did not make findings of fact and conclusions regarding the allegations contained in the pro se motion which you attached to the amended motion?
I believe it did not. I think it made a ruling on the amended motion. Yes, Your Honor.
It said it was illegible, right? I mean, that was...
So I
but,
think...
But since there are no findings made regarding the pro se motion, why doesn't this case have to be dismissed for lack of jurisdiction under Green versus State?
There's still pending claims below, so we can't reach the merits yet, he's asking.
Okay. Your Honor, I do...
You might have... I'm not suggesting... You might have an answer. I mean, I dissented in Green versus State. I'm just seeing if you think there's any difference that would apply, which would suggest there's a final judgment in this case, but there wasn't in that one.
Your Honor, I think there's a couple considerations. First, the court did address the merits of the claim that was raised in the amended motion, and what happened is that I attached pro se claims as well, so it did not, it said that those attached claims were illegible. Now, what I'm saying is the case law that the court was relying on for not addressing those is archaic because, first of all, that was my fault. So if anything, maybe you should address that as abandoned by counsel with respect to that by attaching illegible claims by, you know, that was my fault, if anybody.
Okay, so maybe get back to the direct question then. Why doesn't this appeal have to be dismissed for lack of jurisdiction if there weren't findings on the allegations contained in the pro se motion?
But there was a ruling on it. The court did say that because the claims are illegible, they have not been properly presented and are accordingly denied. So pursuant to agreeing, these claims were acknowledged and were explicitly denied.
Yes, I believe so. And also, in the amended motion, I had another claim that was explicitly addressed by the motion court. I'm not, so I think that at least that part should be addressed. So even, and I think the court did rule saying that it does not need to address it because it's illegible.
They're accordingly denied, yeah, they specifically ruled, so it's not really a green case.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
Counsel, back to the substance of your argument. It's your contention there never was an appointment of the public defender in this case.
Absolutely, Your Honor. The court's intent was not to appoint. It was to notify in compliance with the administrative order, which was properly undertaken following this court's directive in Missouri Public Defenders Commission versus Waters.
Does the public defender's office have authority to enter an appearance in a case in which it hasn't been appointed?
Yes, Your Honor, because I believe that any indigent client can apply directly to a public defender's office, and if that public defender's office determines that he's indigent, can enter on the case of their own accord. There does not need to be any appointment. Furthermore, I believe that the public defender's office can appoint people themselves. So that's one of the things I'm saying in this case. There's a couple of different ways to look at it. First of all, was there an appointment? Another thing is that there was an appointment by the public defender's office in response to the court's notification And that's another way to look at it as well.
If I wanted to find the authority to appear in a case without an appointment, where would I look for that?
So Rule 2915, so a lot of, there seems to be a misconception that Rule 2915 requires the trial court to appoint immediately upon receiving an affidavit of indigency and a 2915 or 24035. And there's cases that go back, but those cases, I believe, are erroneously decided. If you look at what Rule 2915 says, 2915E, it says when an indigent movement files a pro se motion, the court shall cause counsel to be appointed for movement. Now, when the court notifies the public defender's office and allows the public defender's office to make that determination of indigency and decide whether to designate an attorney to represent the person, then it's allowing the public defender's office to make that appointment, to designate and make that appointment. And by doing that, the court is causing the appointment. It's complying, technically, with the provisions of Rule 2915E.
Whether or not what happened after the letter and entry of appearance and so forth, whether or not that was appropriate or that procedure needs to be modified, your main point is that the public defender's office had no notice that this letter notifying them of this case was intended as an appointment, didn't treat it as that, nor did the court treat it as that.
Absolutely, Your Honor. On those narrow grounds, this case is absolutely indistinguishable from Law versus State, which was correctly decided. And there they said, well, it's important that there was a specific designation that I'm not appointing. So that administrative order made it clear this is not an appointment. The judge was merely complying with that administrative order in place. At the very least, this was not an appointment. Regardless, I'm saying that it should be broader because Rule 2915 merely requires that the trial court cause counsel to be appointed. It does not say how or when, how to go about doing that. The court has discretion to notify the public defender's office and allow the public defender's office to appoint counsel.
And did the notification say I'm going to be appointing you at some future time, or did it say I'm notifying you so you can determine whether this person
yes,
is indigent? So it didn't designate the PD. It notified the PD they would need to determine whether this person met the qualifications for it.
Absolutely, Your Honor. It allowed the court. It said an affidavit of indigency is attached, implying that you're going to make that determination that was specifically stated in the record.
And I think I interrupted Judge Draper. So.
You know, you're speaking within the realm of the public defender system and the notification to them, but the rule contemplates not only the public defender system but also appointment of private counsel. Mm-hmm. So what does it mean that the court is going to cause the appointment of private counsel?
What does it mean that the court...
Your argument is turning on the word cause the appointment. And then you're jumping into the public defender system's process of assigning an attorney and where there's an appointment. But suppose the court appoints a private attorney, all right? I mean, indigent people can also be represented by private counsel as well based on simply appointment of the court. You're appointed. You're a counsel here. You have a license. I'm appointing you to this case. This person's indigent. Public defender's overloaded. So you're now appointed private counsel. So how does cause have an effect on different on private counsel as opposed to public defender?
So,
is there no difference?
So, I mean, if that's the case, if the court appoints, then the determination, the deadline is dictated by the date the appointment is made. So regardless of private counsel, public defender, it's dictated by that, 60 days from the date of the appointment, plus 30 if you apply for an extension. But here there was no appointment, regardless of anything else. And so you on the narrow ruling.
There's many ways to cause, more than one way to cause an appointment. One would be to directly appoint yourself as the judge, and the other would be to notify counsel so counsel can enter an appearance if they choose.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. And I believe that the public defender's office can appoint. So there's a statute that says the director may designate anyone, any member of the bar.
That's a different issue that's not briefed, is it, in this case?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
That's a wholly different issue than what you've raised here, though, isn't it?
Well, sort of. So there's some case law out there, which I think is bad case law, that says that the court shall appoint. And if you want to buy into that, which I'm saying that's contrary to 2915E, which says shall cause counsel to be appointed, almost implying that there are other ways, realizing that there's other ways to appoint and designate counsel other than the trial court doing it sua sponte on its own.
Do we have to agree with that in order to rule in your favor?
No, because there was no appointment and in this case. So because there was no appointment, that's under the same as Law versus State. The courts, everyone was entitled to rely on that. It's fundamentally unfair to say, hey, there's this administrative order that says there's no appointment, and then turn around and say, haha, just kidding, we lied.
I wanted to go back to my original question. In your opinion, when was the date of appointment?
So, first of all, I want to say that there's no appointment. But if you believe that there's some case law that requires the court to appoint immediately upon getting a 2915 or 24035, then in that case, I believe the appointment process was completed by the public defender's office when it entered on the case.
And though Stanley says it's not when you enter the case, it's when you're designated.
But Stanley is a case
Different facts.
Where the court, right, different facts, factually distinguishable.
But how do we get around that statement?
So where the court causes the appointment, then yes. But where the public defender's office completes the process of the appointment, then it's different. And there, it's the date of the entry, because the process is completed by the public defender designated someone and having them submitting their entry of appearance. That completes the process of appointment. The court starts the process of appointment under 2915 and 24035 by notifying counsel, causing counsel to be appointed. It doesn't say by whom. It doesn't say that the court has to be the one doing the action.
Well, in interpreting our rule, we would look at what we intended.
Yes, sir.
And so the question is, would the court have intended a system that allows the public defender to set its own time frame in which to file its appearance? Because it appears the overall scheme is that the defendant, the movement, is in jail, and so the court appears to be setting a process to expedite moving forward with this, so it doesn't require a request for counsel, it requires the court to act. And so the administrative order may be at odds with what the intention and the purpose of the rule was, and interpreting it, that language, according to the intent of the court.
Your Honor, if that's the case, if that was the court's intention, then that's the court's intention. And but the ruling in this case should still be that it was timely because of this court's order in the Missouri Public Defender Commission versus Waters, because it was complying, it consulted with the court. There's no abuse of discretion because the court's in control here.
Consequences of it not being timely filed is it goes back for determination of abandonment. And
yes.
If they find that he was abandoned, then counsel has to then act to file an amended motion. So it's not as though the movement may have lost the time of this proceeding, but the movement still has right to have counsel file an amended motion.
Your Honor, I believe that under Moore, it would go back for a determination whether the court should proceed on the pro se motion or the amended motion, whether counsel should be deemed to have abandoned client and which to proceed on, the pro se motion or the amended motion, not to file a new amended motion. But still,
There's no dispute in this case that the original pro se motion was timely filed.
That his pro se motion was absolutely timely filed, Your Honor. But the other thing, Your Honor, is because of that administrative order, and because the administrative order was undertaken with this court's authority and to be ethical, for assistance to be ethical. So I think you're worried about the public defender abusing the system, but the court is in control here. The court can take away, stop doing that, or say, you're abusing the system, I'm going to stop doing that. That administrative order is no longer in place. It's revoked. So the court is in control here. And this court said in Missouri Public Defender Commission versus Waters that the courts have an inherent power to make sure that representation is ethical. And in order to carry out the spirit of that rule, the courts have authority to do this, to alter deadlines, not necessarily alter deadlines, but to modify rules in this manner. So because the court was complying with this court's directive, the court even says, in the administrative order, it says, I am complying with this court's order in Missouri, with the Supreme Court of Missouri's order in Missouri Public Defenders Commission versus Waters. So law versus state recognizes that when there's no intent, it's unfair, and that was a Southern District case. Subsequently, the Southern District distinguished that case in a case where there was no such definitive and clear intent not to appoint.
We've let you run way over your time. We'll hear from you on rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court.
Sure.
Move-in in this case filed a timely pro se motion, including an affidavit of indigency. Move-in had been indigent in both his trial and his direct appeal, so he was likely to be indigent still in his post-conviction. Rule 2915E states that when an indigent move-in files a pro se motion, the court shall cause counsel to be appointed for the move-in. Instead of explicitly doing that in this case,
how long does the rule give the court to appoint counsel?
There is no specific date given for the time that the court has to appoint counsel. There have been cases that say it's a best practice to do it as soon as possible, and that goes along with the purpose of 24035 and 2915, which is to handle these claims quickly because they're an attack on a court's judgment. The notification in this case was intended to manipulate the mandatory time limits in Rule 2915 in order to give the public defender's office discretion on when to enter an appearance and start those time limits.
Well, you're not saying there's anything wrong with the notification. You're taking it, you object to the administrative order, really, because the notification was in accordance.
The notification in this case was in accordance with the administrative order, which is not what the rule allows. But a notification not pursuant to an administrative order should still be considered a de facto appointment because at that point the court is causing counsel to be designated and appointed.
And how is that, and how's counsel to know that? When there's an administrative order saying, if you get this letter, it's not an appointment, and the letter doesn't say it's an appointment, how is counsel to know they're being appointed and the time is to start? As opposed to maybe the practice of the circuit may or may not be correct, but we're dealing here with, was this in fact an appointment, not should it have been an appointment?
This should be considered a de facto appointment regardless of whether the public defender's office realized that it was an appointment, because it doesn't make sense that the entry of appearance is the date when the time limits start running.
But that's a whole different issue. How was this letter an appointment, and how is anyone to know that?
Because counsel shall be appointed in 2915 cases. There is nothing else indicated in the record or anywhere else that counsel was appointed. There has to be an appointment at some point based on the rule. And so this was the only order on the record indicating that something had happened, that a motion
had been
filed.
So maybe there was simply no appointment of counsel here, and we appreciate your voluntary appearance in the court, but there's never been an actual appointment. I understand what I'm saying. You're working backwards and saying, we got to figure out sometime this must have been it. But you have to say, what was the court's intent, and what could any reasonable counsel understand this letter to say? And if the letter said, please come to my office next week, would that be an appointment because it's a communication from the court? Or is it saying we have many criminal cases filed? What is sufficient language to constitute an appointment? And you're saying telling counsel that someone who claims indigency has a case against them is sufficient, even if not intended to be an appointment. And I understand the difficulty presented by these facts and for both counsel and for everyone involved, but why would that be a good line for this court to draw and say you simply have to know that the letter didn't mean what it said, it really meant appointment?
Your Honor, I believe that the public defender's office did know that this was an appointment because they entered their appearance. And in these cases, counsel shall be appointed. It's a common practice that the court appoints counsel as soon as they get these motions. That is what the rule requires. And counsel did enter an appearance. without
why didn't
their...
Why didn't the order say, you know, you're appointed? Why did it say, you know, the other words? Why did it just use the word appointed?
Because the court intended not to appoint counsel by this order, but
and
they
so
do not...
how can that be effective if that's not the court's intent? How can that have that effect when there's no deadline in the rule, whether it's good practice or bad practice? There's no deadline in the rule, and counsel did not intend the letter to be an appointment, and it was not received as an appointment. Whether that's good or bad, whether you should later be able to enter your appearance without appointment, how was that an appointment?
If it's not, if this court considers it not an appointment, there has to have been an appointment for there to have been an entry of appearance. Otherwise...
So maybe that was the error, was the entry of appearance. Why was it suddenly making it an appointment is what I'm asking.
I think that it was an appointment based on the rule. However, if this court finds it not to be an appointment, then it also needs to go back for an abandonment hearing under Austin versus State, which was not this court's case, but an Eastern District case, where there's no indication on the record when counsel was appointed. The entry of appearance...
Doesn't the entry of appearance language of the rule contemplate that it's by counsel, who's by private counsel?
It does. It seems that there are separate rules for appointed counsel for an indigent defendant and for counsel that is retained, whether that counsel is retained by an indigent defendant or not. The entry of appearance is for a retained counsel. The appointment language is for an indigent defendant who the court shall cause counsel to be appointed. And those seem to be separate, and if the entry of appearance can count for a counsel who is supposed to have been appointed, then what is the point of the first part of the rule? There's unlikely to be a situation where there would be an appointment if there doesn't have to be.
In fact, the administrative order makes clear counsel is being appointed, but is being done under subterfuge to avoid the application of the time deadlines. Counsel knows they are to act when they get that letter, but they're all have an agreement that they're acting without it including the language, so they don't have to comply with the deadline.
That is exactly true. The order seems to intend to give the Public Defender's Office some extra time because of their caseload issues, which is not contemplated under the rule. The court shall cause counsel to be appointed. It doesn't give a time limit for that, but it is explicit that once counsel is appointed, those time limits begin.
The order is pretty express that's its purpose.
Yes.
Is to avoid the time deadlines, and so it's saying it's not an appointment, but in effect, everyone knows it is an appointment.
Exactly, Your Honor. The order.
That's a legal question before us. Does it constitute it? I'm unclear if it says I'm not appointing you, even if it should be, and even if it's some reason it's inappropriate. I'm unclear how that can be an appointment if it says that this is not an appointment. How is counsel supposed to know where it's a court error in its interpretation of what its authority is under the rule?
I don't believe that this specific notification said that it was not an appointment, but the administrative order says that the court will no longer appoint the Public Defender's Office. It will instead notify. So it seems to say, and this was copied to quite a few people.
And I'm not saying that, you know, the court may or may not think that's an appropriate order or that's consistent with our rule or consistent with Waters. Assume it's not, and it was improper interpretation of Waters, it is inconsistent with the rule. How does that turn the language saying I'm notifying you into saying I'm appointing you when the order says don't consider this notification to be an appointment?
In this case, I don't think it said don't consider this to be an appointment.
No, but the administrative order says when you get one of these notifications, that's not an appointment.
Right.
So how is counsel in error in not treating it as an appointment?
Counsel had to be appointed at some point. I haven't been able to find anywhere in the public defender statute where it allows their own appointment. And so without anything else on the record, it's the state's position that that was a de facto appointment. Now, if this court considers it not to be, you're right, Your Honor.
And the question, the framing of the question is, it doesn't mean counsel is unethical. It doesn't
right.
mean counsel
no.
erred. It simply means that actions were taken that failed to comply with the rule.
Exactly, Your Honor.
What about the decision in Green then that said there had to be findings of fact and conclusions on everything, and then if you attached a pro se motion and there weren't findings on that, there's no final judgment? How do you read the Green case applicable to the facts of this case?
In this case, Your Honor, I agree with Judge Russell that the motion court made findings on the pro se claim and found that it was illegible, not properly pleaded, and therefore denied.
And so you think that the reading of the majority opinion in Green wouldn't require the motion court to look in the file and see the legible version that's there?
Exactly, Your Honor. I think that comports with Rule 2915E, where it says that, or maybe it's GM, sorry, I think it's G, that says that there's no duty for the court to look back into other documents. The amended motion is the final pleading. And in this case, the court didn't just inadvertently fail to make findings on the pro se motion.
Right. Just refused to look farther into the file to see the pro se motion.
Exactly, which I believe is its prerogative under the rule, which is the purpose of the rule requiring the amended motion to be the final pleading. Everything is supposed to be in that document. And in this case, it wasn't legible. The court made the ruling on that, and that should be a final judgment because it was a finding.
Do you even get to that issue if it's not timely because there's no pleading properly before the court to consider whether there's a final judgment?
Exactly, Your Honor. This court should send the case back for a more hearing to determine abandonment. However, if the motion court would determine that it was that movement was abandoned, it would probably find that the amended motion could be filed untimely, and it would come back, and that could potentially be another issue. Which
and it could correct the problem with the legibility of the pro se attachment.
I don't believe so. I believe it's Sanders. It would probably just accept the motion as is, untimely motion.
I just want to make sure I understand your position. I think I do. If there was a meritorious claim in the pro se motion, it's properly denied by the motion court if it's timely.
In this case, because the pro se claims were not adequately pleaded in the final amended motion, then anything else would be waived at that point, and the motion court properly found that those claims were not properly pleaded in the amended motion.
I want to go back to the administrative order and the attempt to avoid the rule. What's the difference? You've got an administrative order here, but suppose you have the same two counsel to avoid less separate conversations, but the judge says, you know, your client in that case you tried 3 months ago, or not 3 months ago now, but however long ago, has filed a 2915 motion, okay? I think I'm going to probably appoint you guys, but I'm not going to do it for about another week or two, or I might even wait a month or so. What's the difference between that and this administrative order? He doesn't have to appoint him right away. He's got a time. He can wait as long as he wants. He just tells him he's going to wait, and he does it face-to-face because they happen to be in this courtroom on another case on this occasion. What's the difference between that and the administrative order, which is surreptitiously avoiding the rule?
In the administrative order, the purpose is to not appoint at all the public defender's office, and instead to notify, to give them discretion on when to enter an appearance and begin the time limits. However, in the hypothetical that you've just raised, Your Honor, if the court would appoint in a week or a month, then that would be the date of appointment, and it would hopefully be on the record.
So there has to be an appointment, is what you're saying. An attorney can't just run into the client in the while he's confined and say, and the client says, you know, I filed a motion, and I think I need a lawyer on it. The lawyer says, I'll be glad to enter on that. And the lawyer comes in and enters without an appointment. The lawyer can't do that. There has to be an appointment.
In the case of an indigent defendant and the public defender's office, I believe there has to be an appointment according to Rule 2915E. And
suppose a lawyer just enters.
I don't think that that's contemplated by the rule unless it's
So a lawyer can't just enter. He has to be appointed.
A lawyer who is retained by that client could enter, and that would
He's not retained. The lawyer's heart goes out. He wants to do some work and says, I'm just going to enter.
I think in the case of pro bono work, that would still be, if the client did not file an affidavit of indigency to appoint the public defender, then there would be he would not be considered an indigent defendant even if he was indigent. And the second part of the rule would apply because that would still be a retained counsel even if the defendant wasn't paying for it.
Well, since we're going to go down that rabbit trail, does the doctrine of abandonment even apply to those who just enter who aren't appointed?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe that it does.
Okay. So if he just entered his appearance, the doctrine of abandonment doesn't apply?
I don't believe that it does. That is an issue in another case. In this case, the public defender should have been appointed because the movement filed an affidavit of indigency. And I have 7 seconds left, so if there are no other questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors, you asked the question about where the authority to appoint comes from by the public defender's office. So Rule 2915E says, when an indigent movement files a pro se motion, the court shall cause counsel to be appointed. The plain language does not say the court shall appoint. It says the court shall cause. So long as the court shall cause, it's complying with the rule. Then there's a statute, 600.0042, subsection 4, which says, the director and defender shall provide legal services to an eligible person under certain circumstances, one of them under subsection 5 of subsection 4, for whom the federal constitution or the state constitution requires the appointment of counsel. This is such a case, Your Honor.
Well, neither the Missouri Constitution or the United States Constitution require the appointment for post-conviction. It's only our rule that requires appointment for counsel in post-conviction proceedings. There are several cases on that.
Okay.
I understand this process is efficient in helping the public defender's office order its business. What concerns me is whether anybody is looking out for the rights of Mr. Crichton during this time. His pro se motion sat for 7 weeks before the trial court even sent the memo to the public defender's office. The public defender's office then waits 12 more weeks before they enter their appearance and start the clock, and then 3 months more go by before they file the amended motion. How long should we allow a trial court to sit, like the 7 weeks occurred here, and how long should the trial court allow the public defender's office to sit? If 12 weeks here is okay, how much is not?
Well, Your Honor, I think the understanding of the court and the public defender's office, according to this court's ruling in Missouri Public Defender Commission versus Waters, was that the court should monitor that and make sure there's no abuse. And that's another thing. So it's up to the court to monitor that. So that's who's looking out for Mr. Creighton's. And the public defender's office is also looking out for him. I mean, we're not here to screw over clients. We're here to provide ethical representation.
Who would argue it's too long? Who would come to this court or any court?
I guess, Your Honor, the court, the state could do that, and the state could have objected to the fact that there was no appointment. It should have taken up a writ. It should have done something, a writ of mandamus, a writ of prohibition, saying the court can't do this. It did not do that. Instead, it wants to come back now at the end of the case and say it was not invalid what the court did. So they waived that claim. They did not take the proper route to file a writ of prohibition, a writ of mandamus.
It seems unlikely that the defendant should have to rely on the state to enforce his rights under 2915.
Well, Your Honor, I think the public defender's office thinks that they're acting ethically because they cannot provide ethical representation to this person. It's a hot potato. As soon as the trial motion court gets it, they're supposed to throw it up and say, you're appointed.
It doesn't protect their client's interest to come in when they're not prepared.
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor. If they cannot provide ethical representation, which is what this court is saying, if you cannot provide ethical representation, then you must consult with the court. If the court agrees, then it could enter an order, and that's what this court said in Missouri Public. And complied with that. And I believe it also complied with Rule 2915, which says that shall cause counsel to be appointed. Now, if the court says there's no authority for the public defender to appoint, then that's the case. But I believe that it says the public defender's office, and often in trial, they apply directly to the public defender's office. The court isn't even involved. And then there's 600.086, which says the determination of indigency of any person seeking the services of the state public defender shall be made by the defender or anyone serving under him at any stage of the proceedings. Upon motion by either party, the court in which the case is pending shall have authority to determine whether the services of the public defender may be utilized by the defendant. But under that statute, that's not even supposed to happen until after that initial determination was made. But ultimately, there was no appointment, and that's the bottom line. If the state felt the need to challenge that, then they should have done that in the appropriate way. They did not do that. Now, to get to the merits, I believe that I pled sufficient.
The state doesn't have the ability to waive the time limits in 29.15 and 24.035, do they?
Do they have the authority?
They don't have the right to waive the timeliness filing rules.
I don't know what authority they would have, but I believe that if a party does not take action, then it should be stopped. It's equitably stopped from later making an argument that, hey, this didn't happen. It didn't take the legal routes. Just like when someone doesn't object to trial, then it can't later claim, hey, you committed foul. So
you're not dealing with the time limits. You're saying they can't object to the lack of appointment or entry of appearance without appointment. That was something they could have objected to. That's not a time limit issue.
Yes, Your Honor, that's one thing, and also the court's actions in this case. They should have objected if they felt it was warranted. If I could address the merits?
You're 3 minutes over your time limit.
Okay, so, thank you.
Well, I know they're addressed in your brief.